It's Draymond Green, kicking off my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast. And trust me, I'm not holding back. Listen to the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, buddy, it's hour number two of the G-Back Nation on 105 through the Fan. We got the C-Note coming up in 20 minutes. We'll take a look at all your Cowboys headlines and news of the day. But joining us now, the national NBA writer for the All City Network, our guy Tim Cato here on the Fan. And a good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
Hello, friends. How are you guys today?
We are doing outstanding, man. Thank you so much for jumping in here and blessing us with your basketball brain. This is quite a whirlwind around Anthony Davis right now. What are the variables, as they sit here with 3 weeks to go to the deadline?
Yeah, it was a weird day. It was a weird yesterday. It was Anthony Davis out for the season, and then Anthony Davis himself is like, hang on, hold up. You can't believe that. that's not actually the case. And then it turns out it looks like the most accurate depiction of what's going on in Anthony Davis land is that he is going to undergo surgery, that he may or may not be able to return the season in 2 to 3 months. Now, the funny thing is, if you look at a calendar and you fast forward 3 months, I'm not sure Dallas is going to be playing basketball games at that point of the calendar, but at least the idea that he could return is out there. And I think the reason that matters is because Dallas is still very engaged in the trade market. And, you know, for any team looking to trade for Anthony Davis, we'll circle back to that in a sec. But any team interested in trading Anthony Davis, you know, if he's going to return that season, that obviously changes the calculus a lot. My sense is that Rich Paul, Anthony Davis's agent and Anthony Davis's camp, you know, maybe Rich Paul specifically are the people most into the idea of Anthony Davis being in a new NBA franchise. I don't think Dallas is as motivated to trade just for trade's sake, that they feel they have to move on. This is not a disgruntled locker room situation like John Morant, you know, or many other such cases in over the past few years of the NBA. The question is really just, is there going to be a market for him? Is there going to be interest that fits what Dallas is looking for in terms of a return for, you know, a guy who is their best player, just not on the court a lot and not really matching the Cooper Flagg timeline?
The most interesting thing today, I thought, was the idea that there are teams, or I guess this has been out there for a while now, that there are teams that are willing to give Anthony Davis an extension. So do you buy that?
I'm not entirely sure I do. Especially the extension part. Again, I said that the primary motivator or the people behind the scenes most pushing for Anthony Davis to be traded is Anthony Davis's camp. It's not Dallas. And of course, it looks great if you keep pumping it out to the media landscape that, you know, there are so many teams interested in Anthony Davis. I know that there are teams interested in the idea of Anthony Davis. I think that's a big difference than being interested and interested at a level that meets what Dallas would be looking for in terms of return. Right now, my best guess is that he is stuck here in Dallas until the start of next season. And, you know, at which point the hope is that he can prove that his body is not breaking down, you know, once a month, and that he still has the ability to be, you know, the high level basketball player that we have seen on the court. That's my hunch, but trade deadline is unpredictable. I was probably on this station with you guys about this time last year, and I was like, yeah, Dallas is going to have a quiet off season or a trade deadline. You know, don't expect anything major. Yeah. So things do change.
Yeah, we're starting to get closer to that 1 year anniversary that nobody wants to talk about, Tim. But when we loop in that whole deal that happened a year ago, are the Mavericks, the likelihood that they get the return on an AD trade just seems to be less and less likely. How do you think they weigh, and in your opinion, just starting fresh and just ripping the Band-Aid off? Because so many of their fan base, I'm sure, when they just see Anthony Davis in general in street clothes or on the floor, are just reminded by that trade still.
Yeah, it's a really tricky one. And you know, I was at the LLS this time last year. I was on the show you know, five times a week, an hour a day. And, you know, it felt like we were doing therapy, you know, for a lot of it. And, you know, I've always been very, very sympathetic to the fan sentiment and how they feel about it. Obviously, at the same time, I don't think that the Dallas front office can take that into effect or take that into consideration at the expense of making a trade that they think makes sense for them. They're not going to get a huge return back on Anthony Davis. It is possible that, you know, as his contract winds down, and if he were to come back next season and play some games, that it becomes a slightly more manageable risk for other teams to take and gamble on. So I don't think it's, you know, just completely undeniable. Sorry, I got distracted. My mother was calling me.
She probably
wants Anthony Davis updates as well. So. but yeah, you know, the other thing I'll say is that we've all said it, but it is wild looking at all the draft capital, all the picks in the future that Dallas traded to build around Luka. And the idea about trading future draft picks is that Luka was your insurance because of his age, because of the way he raises the floor of a team. And, you know, now they're in a situation where even if they don't move Anthony Davis, the best case scenario is that, you know, they've got one draft pick coming up, you know, that they own outright for about the next half decade. You know, Anthony Davis going down is really unfortunate in a lot of ways, but, you know, in terms of the team's goals and what they should be this season, I do think that, you know, a soft tank is pretty much what's in store.
Yeah, that's why I kind of don't mind not trading him, because if you do get players back that can help you win now, you know, then we pick up a couple of extra wins late and the lottery swings a little bit out of your favor. You know, I do think you know, down as some fans might be to have to see Anthony Davis still, because it reminds them of the Luka Doncic trade, I think, to your point, hanging on to him until early next year might be the way to best optimize what you can get for him and to maximize your chances of the draft lottery. So I don't mind it if sometimes I still have to look away, and it's painful to observe. It's just a few more months.
Yeah, and that's just the reality of the team also. It's like, you know, if he's not movable, if he's going to be sidelined, you know, it may be the path that you know, Dallas fans just have to embrace.
Tim, so what about any other players on the roster? I guess I saw a report today, and maybe you can add more context. The Mavs don't want to trade Najee Marshall, but I'd assume any type of perimeter defender, whether it's him or PJ Washington, you always see teams being interested in closer to the deadline. So is there anybody else? I know the focus is Anthony Davis, but you think the Mavericks could be in play to ship off any of their other players on the roster?
Yeah, I think you mentioned PJ Washington. I think he would be, you know, the prime trade target that was drawing a lot of buzz because of the extension he signed before the season. He is not trade eligible this year, so he won't be in those talks. Najee certainly will, and there's been reporting to that fact. He's a really good player. He's got the best floater in the entire NBA. The stats back that up. It's not just our eye test. You know, Dallas really likes having him around. You know, but that's a player that I, you know, my sense, And emphasize on sense. I you know, this isn't coming directly from, you know, the Mavs front office or anything, but my sense is that they got a, you know, a really compelling offer. That's something that they would listen to for Najee Marshall. They are going to shed salary next season. You know, like they're about $5 million away from the second apron. You know, just the money on their books right now, and that's before you even factor in the first round salary slot. So they're definitely going to shed some salary. It could be over the summer, but I'd be pretty surprised if Daniel Gafford, Klay Thompson, or Najee Marshall, one of those three, at least one of those guys, I think is going to be moving on. The question is just, what are the markets like for Klay and Gafford? My sense, again, and this is more informed from talking to people around the league, is that Gafford has more of a market than Klay Thompson. But I think both of those players are guys that other, you know, opponents, you know, especially guys in the East, teams in the East, I think they could kind of make a push for it. You know, they're at least going to take a look at guys like that. So I would expect at least one of those veterans that doesn't really fit the Cooper timeline to be, you know, moved at the deadline. Question is just which one it is. And, you know, if it's Najee, I think it's going to be a pretty, it would have to be a pretty compelling trade offer.
I do wonder, Tim, if like Cooper Flagg's championship window could start next year if you could make the right moves around him. So I would want to like give serious consideration to let's keep all of our veteran good players, because the advantage in this salary cap era of the NBA is to try to, you know, win big when you have young guys on your roster who haven't gotten the big paycheck yet.
Yeah, 100%. You know, is Dallas actually in a position to be there? Maybe. You know, certainly what I will say, they don't own their first-round pick next year. So there is no incentive to tank. There's no incentive to lose. That is a little bit different than saying they have to go into next season and try to win. You know, if the right team-building step is just acknowledging that the team is still a season away, an off-season away from, you know, a few more moves away, and maybe one more year of Cooper development, you know, like, you know, he's already this good. Lord knows how good he's going to be here in a couple years. That's an acceptable outcome. You know, you're going to go into next year trying to win as best you can. But it's you know, the right move is just whatever you feel is the right steps to build a contender around Cooper Flagg. You know, if this is a team that's in the lottery next season, it's going to be a real bummer because Dallas doesn't have that pick. But as long as it's in pursuit of smart team building around Cooper for the near-term future, you know, I think that's also okay.
Tim, when it comes to trying to trade Anthony Davis, like the role of Rich Paul in all of this, is that a good thing to have him as the agent and trying to get him moved? Or like, how do you explain Rich Paul's role in all of this and trying to get Anthony Davis traded?
Oh man, big question there. Rich Paul is the most influential agent in the NBA. That is just objectively true. Clutch has a lot of power that it can wield, but it doesn't have so much power that it can force a front office to do something. And that's what Dallas's pushback has been, is that, you know, it doesn't matter how much Anthony Davis and his camp and Rich Paul want him traded. It's still going to be, you know, the decision to trade him or to not trade him at this deadline, you know, if there is interest, you know, is going to come down to Dallas doing what they believe is the right basketball move. And that's obviously, you know, it makes it a little bit complicated because people in the front office have to actually go out and say this and kind of push this narrative to counteract, you know, what Rich Paul, now a podcaster, is going around saying. But I think in the grand scheme of things, you know, there are prolific agents. There are agents who have more of a public figure. There are agents who, you know, are a chore to work with behind the scenes. I'm not saying Rich Paul specifically is any of those things, but dealing with agents is part of front office's job. And, you know, I think it just brings more exposure and more headlines to the thing. I don't think it really changes the basketball operation and their execution, their assessment of what they're going to do with Anthony Davis.
Tim, your sources and stuff around the team, when you asked them, is Cooper Flagg been even better than advertised or even better? I mean, are people like, listen, we thought this guy was this, but man, he's even better than what we even thought?
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. You know, what I hear a lot is, you know, that he's this good already without a three-pointer. You know, like the three-pointer has not translated at all so far as rookie season. There's going to be a lot of ironing out for him to do and to become just a more consistent jump shooter. The fact that he is already, you know, the league's best driving forward, you know, that he is just so fluid and so able to, you know, change the angles in which he attacks, it's just remarkable. Yeah, he's been everything that they expected, and yes, I think even a bit more than that.
All-star?
Maybe a little too soon, a little too hot. That first month was still a little bit ugly for him, yeah. But All-star adjacent. You know, he gets one of those nods where it's like, you know, honorable mentions, have to say the name, you know, have to throw it out there. You know, I considered him, but no, he is not an all-star this year, unfortunately.
How do you think the remainder of the season plays out with the Kyrie plan?
I don't have a good sense of what's going to happen there. I haven't heard anything specifically lately, but it sure seems like there's not a lot of benefit to him coming back this year. And at this point, you know, unless it's, you know, very end of the season, but even then, if you get that close to the end of the season, usually you just see players in this situation get shut down. I wouldn't expect him to see him on the court this season. But again, that's more my assessment, just based logically off what Dallas is trying to accomplish this season.
Great stuff, Tim. Love reading it. Appreciate your insights as always and the basketball conversation. We'll look forward to catching up with you soon.
Absolutely. Great to talk to you guys as always.
Salute. There he is, Tim Cato, now the national NBA writer at the All City Network. Absolutely blowing up. You know, sometimes when we have these guys on, they're just like, they're too good, right? It was like, oh, this guy's got an upward trajectory. I can think of David Hellman. I can think of Nick Harris, Tim Cato, obviously in that. I mean, Tim McMahon has blown up, but, sure. You know, that's a big deal there, going from ESPN Dallas to SportsCenter, basically. So it's a pleasure to be able to chat sports with these guys, and Tim Cato's definitely in the group of one of my favorites. Okay, we got the C-Note coming up next here. Cowboys news of the evening, everything happening, a couple of new names on your DC search, and some draft talk as well coming up next with you here on 105.3.
It's Draymond Green kicking off my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast. And trust me, I'm not holding back. Listen to the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
The Fan. Yeah, buddy, welcome back. It's the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan, and it is time now for the C-Note here. Cowboys news of the evening. We do it most every afternoon, 3:20 here on The Fan. The segment's brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car, truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. The Frankels are the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. Broadest fans, we got your Krusty's Corner coming up at 3:40. Look forward to that. Couple of new DC candidates, as the Cowboys requested the interview with Giants interim DC Charlie Bullen for their coordinator vacancy. Todd Archer tweeting, since Bullen was an interim, it was explained to me that the request could not be denied. So take that, New York Giants. Bullen's defense limited the Cowboys to 286 yards and 17 points in Week 18. I don't know, you know, what kind of credibility you give that, or credence you give that in evaluating him. He is known for player-centric and adaptable defensive schemes. You love to hear that. I guess reading the New York papers in anticipation of this story, they felt like he did a better job dialing up pressure packages and simplifying the defense for the players to make more plays. And that Giants defense does appear to be trending in the right direction. But, you know, it's hard to tell. I think at some point, like, the probability of these guys just gets lower and lower with every batch of new guys we get, just by a numbers game. Now there's a 12% chance, if they all have an equal shot, 12.5%, as we're sitting at 8 guys. Cowboys also put in the request to interview Eagles pass game coordinator Christian Parker, and that interview could happen as soon as tomorrow. He was number 7. Bullen is number 8. Is there an expiration date on this process, you think, guys? Like, is there a time where you want to have this settled by, maybe Senior Bowl?
I don't feel like there's any reason to be in a hurry until these teams start hiring head coaches. You know, and maybe you want to be ahead of this one. But the minute some of these head coaches or these guys that are interviewing for jobs get jobs, they're going to be looking to put staffs together. So I think you want to kind of be ahead of the game on that. You make sense about the Senior Bowl stuff. You got the East-West game coming up. We got a lot of things coming up right at the end of the month.
Yeah. I was just thinking draft prep, but I mean, you got a better point than that these staffs are going to get flushed out as soon as the head coaches get appointed.
There's going to be some guys out on the street and stuff, but you're ahead of it right now with your interviews. But you got to worry about, what if these guys, you know, you might lose, say for example, Brian Flores gets a job. Well, then you might lose your
Durante Jones.
You might lose Jones as a defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
So you got to be ready for that. I think until the first head coach gets fired, you could be hired. You could be patient, and then once that first one happens, then now you got to go be proactive, because you don't want to lose the guy you really want.
So I'm a big Shoddy fan, maybe as big as it gets in the media. We were talking about him to open up the show, and somebody texted that that I was, you know, way too optimistic about what he's capable of. But, I mean, look what he did for the offense. Look what he's done for this coaching search.
Yeah.
Okay, this is an actual real coaching search that he has upgraded not only the Joneses' way of looking at things, but what they're going to allow the coach to do. Like, this stuff is, in a way, unprecedented under Jones, especially for a guy that doesn't have many skins on the wall. We're paying more attention to the middle of the field. We're trying to play physically on both sides of the line of scrimmage. We're treating defensive tackle like you might actually want to get good ones if you ever plan on stopping the run and pressuring quarterbacks up the middle. We've solved that. Like, I just think there's a number of upgrades here with Shoddy, and, you know, no offense to anybody, but I think sometimes people have a difficult time seeing value when you don't have a winning record. I think that's really what this comes down to.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's about wins on the football field, but I think he's done an excellent job in terms of, he uses the buzzword culture all the time, but I think you've actually seen, especially the way that they were able to navigate the Marshawn Nealon tragedy. That was huge. And I know Bobby talked about that a lot, about, you know, Shoddy was probably the best person suited for that. I think when you see some of the behind-the-scenes stuff on Hard Knocks, him as a communicator, all the stuff that he wants, the teaching qualities, he possesses. So, you know, my next thing is, I really hope we see a trend in the right direction for safeties being more of a priority, because I don't think that's been something that's been a priority here for 20
next.
Years.
Yeah.
And it does, when you're just kind of looking at all of these names they're bringing in, it's guys that have secondary experience. Their forte is the secondary. They clearly were not happy with the way their corners and safeties played. And I do love the fact, you know, some people I've seen already, oh man, why should we be excited about these no-name guys that nobody's ever heard of? That makes me more excited. I kind of love the fact when you're kind of going and you're looking under every rock and you're talking. Clearly, I think that he is talking to people around the league, much like how he found Clayton Adams, much like he found Connor Riley at Kansas State. And he is using everything at his disposal to bring in who he thinks are the best candidates for the job.
Yeah.
And also, if indeed, let's say it's Jim Leonard, or if it ends up being a Brian Flores, who Josina Anderson put out, she's told the Cowboys still have interest there and are monitoring that. They just have not scheduled an interview yet. He interviewed with the Commanders today. You never know if any of these other guys could end up on the staff in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, that's kind of – I've got people in the organization kind of feeling like – I got people steering me one way, saying that, no, these are legitimate coaching interviews. – And then the others are saying, you think we're kind of trying to divert some things. And so, I don't know, man. I'm kind of like, you know, trying to kind of figure out which one is the more believable here. I'll say this, though. I think the fan base, their legitimate fear is what happened in Philadelphia, say, the last couple of years. Remember, Philadelphia fired both their coordinators before the Super Bowl? I mean, yep. They went and got Kellen Moore, and they went and got Vic Fangio. I think fan base is worried that you're going to hire a coordinator that has no experience, and it's going to be much like what Philadelphia went through.
Yeah.
You know, that like all of a sudden
it's
risky. That these guys are over their heads and they weren't ready to be coordinators. I like the fact that it's new, fresh names and all that, and that people are talking nice about them. But I could understand the fan base going, damn, Philadelphia had two coordinators under Nick Sirianni, brand new, what, Brian Johnson and somebody else. And what happened to them? Both those guys were let go at the end of the year.
Was it Sean Desai?
Yeah, yes. Sean Desai. There you go. I think that's
fair
where the
point.
I think that's where the fan base, I think they're excited about the search.
Yeah.
I think the fan base is really excited about the search. I think we all fear what we don't know. And that's
absolutely.
We don't know the names. And then the other thing we fear is like, yeah, they might know they bring this guy in and then he's a bag of ass.
Yeah, you know? But it could go both ways. I mean, you just did it with the Eberflus.
Oh, no, but that's
like Nolan in 2020.
No, I'm just saying that's kind of what, but
it's an inexact science.
If fan base is like struggling with this, if they're struggling, I could understand their fear.
I just like, but I think the interview process is really the big thing for me, and we talked about that in every post-game show. We want an extensive search.
No question.
They've given us the extensive search here.
They've handled this thing beautifully. I just, you know, when Joe and Flower Mound does not recognize name, Joe and Flower Mound goes, what the F are they doing?
Yeah.
What are they trying to go cheap here? Are they trying, you know, it's immediately it turns into they haven't done it right. And so now by not do well, I say they haven't done it right. We saw what with the line coach and the, you know, the coordinator and stuff like that. But overall,
that's what gives me confidence.
That there you go. That's the thing you should be talking about. But I think Joe and Flower Mound also says, it's Jerry's involved and they're going to F this thing up and they're going to hire a coach that doesn't know what the hell he's going to do and the defense is going to be god awful again. I think that's the fear.
469 says, I do fear the Jones boys will screw it up. And there's always the opportunity for that. I love that Woolchuck brought up safety because another thing here is the Joneses have said for years you can't have everything, and Jerry loves to tell this story about getting off his private jet and jumping into an old Ford Bronco, which were pretty badass, by the way, if you get one restored now from like the late 80s, early 90s.
Pretty penny.
But, you know, the guy I was traveling with was like, what are we doing here in this old Ford Bronco? And he said, well, you can't have everything. So the Cowboys have looked at it like, well, if the most important part of the game is the passing chunk plays, let's get edges and corners, and let's get wide receivers and tackles and quarterbacks, and that's where our money's going to go. And I think they maybe lied to themselves that you could actually win the Super Bowl that way. Mm-hmm. And hopefully part of Shoddy's message is, yeah, that's a good way of building if you want a pretty good team that's highlight friendly. But if you actually want to go all of the way, we have to figure out a way to get every position solved with quality guys.
Yeah.
And if he can do that, then I think everybody will agree with me that he's the man. All righty, it is the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. And we got Krusty's Corner coming up next. Brian, where are you taking
it? Yeah, let's carry on the football conversations. We'll do that next.
What's up? It's Draymond Green. I'm back for my 14th NBA season, and my podcast, The Draymond Green Show, is back too. This season, I'm breaking down games, reacting to the biggest NBA stories, and sitting down with teammates, rivals, and culture shapers. And trust me, I'm not holding back, on the court or on the mic. Two new episodes every week, new segments, big conversations, real basketball talk for the real hoop heads. Listen to and follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts. We're back, we're better, let's get it.
Next. Right on. Thank you, Lucius. It is the G-Bag Nation here on The Fan. We are going to have Danny Cannell on talking college football natty tomorrow at 4 o'clock. It's time now for Krusty's Corner, brought to you by Greystone Roofing. Go to greystone-roofing.com. Here's the king.
Hey, kids! Your old pal Krusty's going to teach you 5 new words.
You're not wrong about that.
From Dallas, Texas, number 55, Brian Waters.
Thank you very much, Lucius. Appreciate you playing that. Thank you to Greystone as well for being a part of this one, as they always are. Really appreciate that. I was going to talk about there, Woolchuck. I was going to ask you something.
Okay.
Dawson, you haven't – Dawson, have you looked at Anthony Hill, the linebacker from Texas?
A little bit. Yeah, I thought –
Enough to be dangerous?
Yeah.
Okay, let me ask you guys a question then. Because there's a lot of – Vats Lombardi and I had this in our discussion this morning. On our podcast, and Vach brought up to me that he felt like that Anthony Hill was a better prospect than Allen was from Georgia.
If and you want a Mike linebacker, I agree. I think he's a better Mike than I think CJ Allen might be a better weak side linebacker. I think Anthony Hill is a true Mike. I think Allen has
so
the
you
ability.
Got Allen. You got Allen as an outside linebacker more so than an inside linebacker.
Yeah, I do. I think
and Georgia is where
Georgia.
Allen's from,
and then and Anthony Hill Jr., Denton Ryan in Texas.
Yeah,
yeah. And look, I think Anthony Hill. I mean, the size is there. The size is better than C.J. Allen. He's physical. I think he's a tremendous blitzer. I think him being able, and I think that's something that Texas fans complained about and might be a big reason why you now have Will Muschamp there and a new defensive coordinator because of the way that Anthony Hill was used this year.
Wow, that's inside information I would not be aware of or privy to. I see it the opposite. I think Allen is a classic middle linebacker in the middle of the field. He can plug the run. He can zone drop. I think Hill is up on the line of scrimmage and blitzing, and I think you already got him in Overshown.
It's funny that if you read the way my notes, and I was sitting there reading it, and I had Allen over Hill.
Yeah, I do too.
But when I read my notes, it's like It's like Hill was a better player.
I didn't love Allen when I watched him. I really didn't. And he's a guy that everybody's kind of, he should be in the consideration at 20.
Everybody's talking about him as a mock at 20. And I'm kind of, and the more I got into it, and linebacker, we agree, linebacker's pretty damn important here, right?
Oh, and they need it badly. Yeah. And the thing is, he had a game against Florida that I watched where he dominated, and the tape was incredible.
That's Hill, right?
I'm talking about C.J. Allen out of Georgia. Yeah.
And maybe Hill didn't dominate Florida, just kind of, didn't they go up and down the field on Texas that day?
They did. They did. But I thought that Hill was good against Ohio State. I thought he was good against Oklahoma. If you go back and watch him in the Peach Bowl against Arizona State, his 2024 tape is better than the 2025 tape for Hill. But for Allen, the Tennessee and Georgia Tech games I watched of him, I was like, it's just a little underwhelmed. I mean, he is probably the better overall athlete. And not probably, he is. He is a better overall athlete than what Anthony Hill Jr. is.
Uh-huh.
Anthony Hill Jr. to me, yeah, I might like him as a better pure linebacker.
See, that's the thing. The way that I was studying Allen, you know, and like I had some questions about, you know, the cover ability. I had some questions about, you know, the way that he was getting off the blocks and stuff like that a little bit. And it just seemed like to me that reading Hill, it sounded better. And that's what I hate. That's what I hate when all of a sudden I'm like, you know, you compare a couple of players and you go back and you read your notes and you're like going, did I put this guy too high? You know, is C.J. Allen, should C.J. Allen, I mean, and I have him in the second round on my board the way it is. So at 20 would make a lot of sense. But I just wondered if, like, that Hill overall would be a better fit for the Dallas Cowboys at 20 than who everybody's mocking C.J. Allen to. You know, I just wonder that.
I wonder how important it is right now for the Cowboys to find a savvy middle linebacker who's good with the zone dropping and is going to play against tight ends. I just see Anthony Hill as a heat-seeking missile who's really good at it. But, like, some of the middle linebacker stuff with, like, stacking and shedding blocks, I don't see him doing that. I see him knifing through, getting to the ball carrier. Like, taking risks to blow up plays more than being solid down in, down out.
It's funny that you say that because I wrote down in my notes he can play zone and he's got good awareness there. He can pick up tight ends in coverage, but he'll over-pursue and he has a tendency to run himself out of position or miss tackles.
He runs fast and he'll overrun some plays that way. So I was just curious of kind of how you guys – how you saw that one with him, you know, particularly. I think
you need a quarterback of the defense, and he is like a weapon on defense.
I think he's a weapon too, and I wonder if he's a better weapon than
Allen.
Than Allen,
that would be awesome.
But I just say that because I keep seeing.
So you're putting him and Overshown on the field together, and you're happy about that?
A Hill?
Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, I think Hill's a better pure linebacker than what Overshown is. And he's a better player. He's a bigger player. I do think Overshown. Like, I didn't love the Overshown tape coming out of college.
Yeah.
But he's been awesome as a pro. And I think allowing him to play maybe strong side linebacker or weak side, I don't think he's a middle linebacker. I do think Anthony Hill is. I think C.J. Allen could be as well, to your point. I mean, I don't disagree. I just think he's got the flexibility to be an outside player. I don't want to say the word finesse because that's not, you know, people take that. I wanted to see him play more physical sometimes. You see him being able to run the alley, make plays in space. He's a tremendous athlete that runs well. But I just wanted to see a physical player that plays a little bit faster. To me, sometimes I think, I don't know if he's thinking, I don't know if he's processing, and he's just kind of waiting for the play to develop in front of him. But I saw a little bit, I don't know if it was necessarily timidness or hesitancy, but it wasn't just like see it and go. You see more of that with Anthony Hill.
Yeah.
With C.J. Allen, I see a little bit more of like, wait. Boom! Fire.
I think it has something to do with the scheme because
that could absolutely. Because I don't know what he's been asked to do.
Those two gap guys,
100%.
The way they're taught to read. Chief, I'm going to ask you a question about this guy. I watched this player at Miami. This Keontae Scott, this corner.
Yes.
All right, Zach, you said you have not seen him yet,
I haven't, like, studied. I obviously have watched him
play. You watched him play.
But have not done my breakdown of him as a draft prospect yet.
I watched him this morning. He's a corner. And again, Dallas looking for corners. And I bring this up because Jerry specifically talked about Jordan Lewis in the nickel position.
Yeah, this is a nickel thoroughbred.
Okay, from your experience of watching the Canes and what you think about him as a player, you got an opinion on that?
Yeah. I think he's a total dog. He's physical. He will tackle. They blitz him quite a bit.
Keontae Scott.
Yeah. He wears number zero for the Hurricanes. He's the one that had the big pick six versus Ohio State. Like, the instincts jump off the screen to me. Physicality, TFLs in the backfield. Like, when you're talking about a nickel corner, you got to be like a jack of all trades kind of guy. You got to be sticky in coverage, and then you also have to be able to play in the run game. And if you're good enough for it, the blitz element. Like, I think he is sort of an all around kind of player when it comes to physicality, tackling, sticky in coverage, instincts, blitzing, and just like a crazy dog, violent mentality. Like, I think he encapsulates all of that.
I had a scout tell me about this guy. And I was curious. I don't think this guy's a corner.
He's a safety?
I think he's a strong safety.
Okay.
I think he's a strong safety. And I say this, and I asked a buddy scout of mine that goes to Miami for the school. And I said, where do you play Keontae Scott at corner? You play him at corner or safety? And he said, a great question. I don't know if he has the smarts to be a full-time safety. Okay?
Okay.
The football smarts. I think I would keep him in the slot.
Hey, 6 feet, like
6 feet, 195. 92, yeah, okay. 92. And I go, okay. And he goes, it's funny when you watch him, he does everything but cover guys.
Well, I do think a lot of his big plays have been TFLs, sacking the quarterback.
Yeah.
And then jumping some routes. I think he's been pretty good in coverage, but maybe some of his better plays are sort of around the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, he goes, he's always blitzing. He's always flying around. The last thing he does is just cover.
Mm.
So I think that, to me,
that's not really what you want in the corner.
That's but he plays really, really well. I mean, he plays.
I've been impressed watching him as a slot corner.
I thought, to me, I was thinking like, yeah, everybody's like talking about this guy as, but he's right. The plays you see, the big plays you see,
mm-hmm.
are him.
Sure.
Him like being around the line of scrimmage, him blitzing, him tackling, him like playing the run.
It does sound like a strong safety.
I don't know. That's the thing about it is, but to me, like, here's a guy that, and you're talking about it, Chief. You talked about that interception he made.
Yeah, it was a huge play.
In the Ohio State game.
It turned the game.
You watched the Louisville game. You watched Scott playing the Louisville game. He knocks a ball loose. Like, Miami's dead. Miami's dead in the last 4 or 5 minutes of this game. And he makes a play where he knocks the ball loose, and Miami gets it, and then they're back. And then he makes the next series, he makes another tackle, like, on third down to get him off the field.
Yeah, he's splash play kind of dude. And, yeah. I mean, I've seen him be pretty sticky in coverage at times, but, I mean, I'll take your guy's word for it, who's scouting this thing out at a high level.
The guy, like I say, it's, hey, scouts are, sometimes, you know, you're right, sometimes you're wrong, but His thought about it was like, how often do you see him really cover? Because there are so many splash plays. But I love the player. I just don't know where you
play him.
Where you play him, and I think that's tough.
And you and
Aisha did our show yesterday, the Stack, and we were talking about these safeties.
Yeah,
and we were kind of going through them because you just mentioned earlier we were talking about needing a safety.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, look, I'm praying for Downs to get to 12. In reality, it's probably going to be like Jenty and Tedrow and McMillan. In no world should Downs be on the clock, on the board for you when you're on the clock at 12. He's too good of a player. Somebody should be taking him, whether it's Washington or somebody else. So the problem now is that next litter of safeties, most of these guys are all going to go day two, second round.
Yeah.
So do you want to just say, screw it, I like a guy at 20 if you get stuck there, and you take him because you like him, or you just don't take one. And now, what are you going to do with the position? You've got to sign somebody in free agency, or maybe once we get more to day three players, there's a safety we like that they could look at in the fourth round. But that's where, like, the prospect of sliding back to get an extra pick. And, everything you want a linebacker to me, Gavin, is Jacob Rodriguez. If you want a true middle linebacker that's a leader, field general, going to have everybody in the right position, is just as always around the ball. Are there some warts to his game because of his size? Yes. But to me, he's the perfect blend of I can stop the run, I can also cover, and he's just a team captain.
So you would take him over Hill and Allen at 20, right?
Yeah, I think he's kind of a perfect blend between the two.
Yeah, okay.
You know, because he's got the same size as Allen. Hill's the bigger player.
Right.
But I think Rodriguez can do a little bit of everything. I know there's going to be teams that say he's a third rounder.
Yeah.
Because of his size, and there's just things.
He doesn't look like he's athletic enough. He looks like a great college linebacker.
He's sneaky athletic. I think he's going to test pretty well.
Nice.
I think he's going to test better than people think he will coming up here at the combine.
Sometimes body composition can be mistelling.
Yeah.
Yeah. I appreciate you guys. I just like to say the Scott thing kind of threw me off a little bit, because when I thought everybody saying nickel corner, nickel corner, nickel corner, and I was kind of like, let me see nickel corner cover, and I wonder. I think he probably can, you know, but I wasn't really sure. I think he's more of like the way he plays. He's really like Dan Quinn. Would he use this guy like a box kind of safety is what he would have done.
Yeah, I mean, open field tackling.
Yeah.
He's a stud.
Good.
He's physical.
Yeah.
I watched the SMU game.
Yeah.
Watch the SMU game. I think you'll see a couple of plays in there where
he's covering a little bit more.
He's going man to man.
Yeah,
he had an interception
Louisville.
Playing zone coverage versus Syracuse.
He was great against Texas A&M. He really, really was.
Yeah,
he had some great plays. Thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Brought us Krusty's Corner every afternoon, 3:40 in the G-Bag Nation. Football fix time, Zach. What do we got?
All right, let's do it. What's going on? The inside track for Harbaugh, the Cowboys defensive coordinator search, and Tony Romo saying bleep the haters. That's next in the Nation.
It's Draymond Green kicking off my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast. And trust me, I'm not holding back. Listen to the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.